Welcome to the Denker Capital podcast, where our highly experienced team of in-depth thinkers and other experts share their insights on a range of investment-related topics. In this podcast, we have conversations about developments in South African and global markets and what these may mean for investors. We analyze specific stocks and sectors and explore general themes relating to the fundamental principles that underpin sound investment decisions in an ever-changing world.
Hello, everyone. Today, I'm joined by a special guest, Richard Claude from Janus Henderson Investors. Richard started out in the industry back in 2003, and so for a number of years has been analyzing and looking at technology companies. Early on in his career, he worked specifically in emerging markets and is now the co-manager of the Janus Henderson Investors Technology Leaders Fund, a strategy which is some $10 billion in size. And I think, Richard, you've been managing with the team since 2014. Is that about right?
That's right. And they've been managing tech money even longer than me, going back before the dot-com bubble.
Well, thank you for joining us. I think let's start right at the beginning. Maybe you could just give us some feedback as to how you see a technology company and what defines a technology company.
Yeah, it's a very simple question, but the answer is probably more complicated. We certainly don't use JICS or MSCI to define what a company is. They seem to be on a mission to try and reduce the concentration of technology in the index as technology continues to take share of the global economy, and then obviously as a result, the stock market as well. And what we found is actually a very simple definition has really helped us define what we view as a technology company. And that is any company that has a proprietary piece of technology that could be software or hardware that really is core to their franchise and is very important to their right to make money and to make profits, which really defines what they do. And we've always kept that in the back of our mind every time some new company comes to market and claims it's a technology company. You know, back in the day, that was GE. But more recently, I spent one of the more entertaining couple of hours of my life with Adam Neumann, the founder of WeWork, where he spent most of that time trying to convince me their company was a technology company rather than a real estate company. And it's been very useful lens to look at all of these new companies coming through.
Yeah, sure. Okay, thank you. I mean, during the course of the last couple of years and the period of the pandemic, I mean, there's been a huge amount of noise around the technology sector. And I believe, you know, one or two unprofitable technology indices or baskets, you know, set up around the world by a number of the index organizations. How do you think about, you know, what has happened, Richard, and where we are today? And in terms of the management of the portfolio, how does that impact on the way you do things?
We use the word unprecedented during the pandemic many, many times. And, you know, I think when we saw those lockdowns around the world, we'd never seen anything like it. And we saw a huge acceleration in so many of the technology trends that we've been talking about for many years, and then many new ones as well, as we suddenly had this mass global experiment of remote working and remote learning and having to do everything from the security of our homes. And, you know, when you combine that acceleration of growth in technology with a scarcity of growth, given how hard hit the rest of the economy was, further central bank support, more liquidity coming into the market, even lower interest rates, and then the Robin Hood crowd and the retail sort of investors coming into the market too. That was the perfect perfect storm to create this wild ride in these very unprofitable technology stocks that you mentioned. So the Morgan Stanley unprofitable tech basket was up 344% from the March 20 lows to the peak in February of 2021. And many sort of market commentators and investors try to sort of paint this narrative that it was different this time, that, you know, software was eating the world, data is the new oil. And we had this chart that goes back 40 years that shows, even within technology, the performance of the most expensive versus the least expensive technology stocks. And we just had to completely rescale that chart, as even within the sector, those most expensive technology stocks just outperformed so much, to the point where sort of in the early 2021, almost 40% of all technology companies were unprofitable. And, you know, we had many sort of, you know, fund managers, you know, sort of making the names for themselves off the back of that. Cathie Wood at ARK's, obviously the most famous, but many, many others went on that bandwagon too. And many of those actually had not even really been investing pre the global financial crisis, let alone the tech bubble. And then obviously we fast forward to today where, you know, we don't want to spend our lives on a Peloton. We want to get out and about. We're all a bit zoomed out. And people were then starting to ask, you know, if these companies weren't profitable during a lockdown and insatiable demand for their services or products, you know, when would they ever be profitable? And then rates started to normalize, central banks started to taper. And we've seen now an over 60% drawdown in that unprofitable technology basket. And many, unfortunately, many funds, ETFs and active funds see similar drawdowns off the back of that. And I suppose when we look at that, you know, we've been investing in tech for many, many years. As I said, you know, my co-managers have been since the pre-2000. I've been since 2003. You know, we just felt that, you know, there was unnecessary risks being taken. You know, there were many profitable beneficiaries of what happened during the pandemic. A great example of that's the largest company out there in Apple. You know, Apple doubled its profits to over $100 billion this year and has seen its stock rise, you know, over 140%. And it's profitable. It's on 30 times PE, not 30 times sales. And we've always felt that, you know, while technologies change, the technology companies change, one thing has stayed very constant, which, you know, valuation does matter. And we like our history. I read history at university. Bernstein did a very good report that goes back 50 years where they looked at buying companies on over 15 times sales. So not earnings, sales. And they found that in history, that really wasn't a very profitable strategy. On average, you underperformed by 18% over the next 3-year period, and your hit rate was just over a quarter. So we feel that, you know, that hasn't changed in the market. We want to be laser focused on having some valuation discipline. The forward PE of our fund is 20 times. We have about 3% of the portfolio that's unprofitable. And that's what's really protected our clients' capital, both in that major drawdown period, sort of a February to April last year, and then since November last year. And that's where, you know, why you look at our sort of fund, we're not down much versus that February 21 peak, while a lot of our peers, you know, have had 20 to 40% drawdown since then.
Yeah, no, thank you, Richard. I mean, when you run through some of those numbers, it's quite a scary and interesting period. I know that also the team, you use this phrase, the hype cycle. Maybe you could just open up a little bit on what you mean by that.
Sure. Again, that's been sort of a core part of our philosophy going back over 20 years now. And I suppose what we do, you know, is there's sort of two parts to that. You know, one is that, you know, we're not just looking for growth. You know, anyone can find growth in the tech sector, hopefully. What we're looking for is unexpected growth. So growth that's not already priced in to a stock. And when we talk about growth, we're talking about earnings and profit growth. There's been this sort of and cash flow growth. There's been this sort of over obsession with revenue growth. More recently, you know, revenues mean nothing. You know, I could give away a bunch of iPhones tomorrow. That doesn't make me a good company. And we've seen these sort of billion-dollar checks being written by SoftBank to all these companies around the world. And that's effectively what they've been doing. They've basically been subsidizing sales. You know, what we're looking for is companies where we have very high conviction that they're going to be the profitable and dominant leaders of the future. And to think about that, you've got to think about various elements there. You know, if they're the best company and have the best technology today, is that technology ready for adoption now? Or are there sort of some pain points to adoption that means that actually it's not going to take off for a few years yet? Have we actually hit the inflection point? If they have the best technology now, this company, are they going to have the best technology in 3 or 5 years' time? Because that's going to be when we're actually basing that valuation on some profits and cash flow. So do we have conviction that they're going to have that profits and cash flow in 3 to 5 years' time? And we certainly don't do DCFs. We certainly don't look out 10 years, just given how dynamic and fast moving the technology market is. And then the other element to that, navigating the hype cycle, is putting a reasonable valuation framework around those profits and cash flow. We don't do price to sales or look at terminal values in a DCF. We're looking at real profits and cash flow on a 3 to 5 year view, putting a reasonable multiple around that and thinking what would be willing to pay for those stocks today. You know, that's something that we've been doing consistently for the last 20 years because we learned the lesson the hard way in the dot-com crash that, you know, just because you had a website and were selling online didn't mean that you were worth $10 billion or $100 billion. We've kept that very much in the back of our minds when we've looked at any new technology or any time the market tells us that it's different this time.
Thank you. I think let's just change tack slightly because I'd like to get into, you know, one of the core areas that investors are focusing upon right now, and you know, we don't see this changing clearly going forward, and that's impact and sustainability of investing. Richard, in terms of the technology sector and technology companies, how is technology enabling the sustainability?
Yeah, it's a really good question because I think, you know, clients tend to focus on the mega caps in tech, the FANG stocks, and you know, a lot of that is revolving around the negative things that some big tech is doing. And, you know, we spend a lot of time with a lot of technology companies around the world that we really think are having a positive impact on the world and really providing solutions to some of the global challenges that we face. You know, we very much see technology as the science of solving problems, and you've got some biggies out there that we need to solve. And you've already seen some of that happen already. So, you know, today we're looking at US coal consumption down almost 60% in the last 13 years and approaching levels last seen in the 19th century. And you've got to remember, during those 13 years, four of those years, they actually had a president that didn't believe in climate change. And that's because of technology. The price and cost of solar panels collapsed over 80%, wind power by almost 50% because of technology. And you can get some very good stock returns out of that as well. You know, SolarEdge, which is one of the leading solar inverter companies globally, has actually outperformed Amazon by 400% during that period. So, you know, getting these trends right and finding these technology solutions to some of these global challenges can be very profitable in the stock market too. And we're seeing something very similar with electric vehicles today. But I think when we look beyond that, we see that the global challenges that we face, that they're so broad that they need a great breadth of technology innovation to provide solutions to them. So beyond just climate change, you know, we've got to think about smarter cities. We need to leverage 5G and Internet of Things, AI, to make cities more efficient, to have less congestion, less wastage. We need to create circular economies that need sort of asset tracking technologies like RFID. We need to have more efficient, secure, and 100% renewable data centers. We need to automate processes in a carbon neutral way. And we need to sort of democratize access to quality education or healthcare or promote financial inclusion. And in every case, we think that technology are key to providing that innovation, those exponential leaps to provide those solutions and to do that in a low carbon way. And we think by doing that, we're naturally going to access some of the largest and longest runway growth markets out there. So if we can navigate the hype cycle in those growth markets, we think we're going to be able to deliver both some very attractive long-term capital returns, but also have that positive impact on the world. There's a very natural synergy in technology investing in sustainability.
Yeah, thank you. And it sounds from what you're saying there that, you know, the technology opportunity is becoming more global and not just, you know, as it perhaps has been and is perceived, very US focused. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair for a variety of reasons. I think you're seeing the sort of the natural sort of, you know, evolution of the world to being less US centric, you know, whether that be China, but also some of the emerging markets as well. And then you're seeing sort of, again, the progress of capital markets where, you know, before, if you wanted to set up a tech business, it had to be in Silicon Valley. That's where the VCs were. I think increasingly, you know, now we have, you know, VCs and PE funds in China, obviously, but in Southeast Asia, in Latin America. So you can go home and then build these businesses in other bits of the world. And then the stock market's there to support the public sort of life of those companies as well. And, you know, I think as we came into late last year, we did see a growing dislocation between some of those US companies in technology and some of their Asian counterparts that were very much playing to the same themes, or in some cases, actually suppliers to the same companies that were going up 100% or more in the US. And so we actually shifted the portfolio late last year to very much increase our Asian exposure. We stepped back into some of the Chinese internet stocks, notably Tencent, which we'd sold earlier in 2021. We increased our position in TSMC. We added to our memory exposure because we felt that there was a huge dislocation between some of those Asian semiconductor companies and their sort of US sort of SOX counterparts like Nvidia and AMD.
Thank you. Let's just bring it to today and looking forward, if you don't mind. We sit in a period of rapidly rising inflation. Lots of questions about that, about oil price, rising rates to combat inflation on a global basis. How do you see this year panning out, Richard, for the sector? And maybe I could ask you, is there one particular area that really excites you and you think will break through over the next year or so through the sector?
Sure. So, you know, we retain a sort of a positive outlook for the technology sector. I think everywhere we look, we're seeing some very strong trends. I mean, there is some normalization in some of those pandemic beneficiaries that are now lapping some very difficult comps. But I think generally within technology, we're seeing some very strong trends across most of our core technology themes. I think as technology investors, you know, we don't just get seduced by the technology and the growth. We are remaining laser focused on those valuations, given, as you said, you know, rising interest rates, rising inflation expectations. I mean, ultimately, as long as we're laser focused on that valuation and maintain that discipline, we think inflationary forces are ultimately very beneficial to technology adoption, because they are, you know, technology is the ultimate deflationary force. And a lot often the sort of the biggest impediment to adopting new technology is sort of status quo and incumbency. So, you know, no one wants to update their factory because it costs a lot of money. And kind of why would you if everything's going fine? But then you end up with, you know, you're not being able to get any labor, huge wage inflation, you know, COVID scares. That's when you start making hard decisions to automate your factory or to adopt AI. And we're seeing this time and time again around the world that suddenly these hard decisions are being made. And that's generally leading to more technology adoption. So the backdrop's pretty strong. But I think, you know, when we think about where we want to be exposed to, as I said, we want to be laser focused on valuation. So with, you know, we increased our Asian exposure. We think those Chinese internet companies are too cheap. We thought some of those Asian semiconductor areas were too cheap. We're generally overweight semis and that cyclical side of technology as we see that sort of economic recovery coming out of the pandemic. And then maybe some of the, you know, there's this myth that all technology companies benefited universally from the pandemic. That's not true. There are many areas of technology that were pretty hard hit. So again, we probably want to have more exposure to that heading into 2022, which we think is actually going to be the year that we expected in 2021 of coming out of COVID and sort of ending up with sort of slightly more normal lives through the year and beyond. And, you know, I think there are many names, whether on, you know, in online advertising or in payments or in ride hailing, that, you know, got very hard hit by that restriction to travel, or areas that were very hard hit and then weren't advertising. We think that those areas will then recover through 2022 and then see a sort of resumption of strong growth beyond that as well. And then we think about some of those sort of longer term secular growth areas. You know, everyone's talking about the metaverse, and always people are talking about, you know, new metaverse ETFs or new metaverse funds. And we always remind people that actually, if you look at the biggest metaverse ETF today, five of their top 10 are in our top 10 of a broad-based technology fund. Actually, most of the main sort of metaverse plays are in many cases large or mega cap tech companies that are already held in sort of generalist tech funds as well. So, you know, we remain sort of very sort of positive on, you know, both the near term and longer term trends. We think, you know, when you think about what you want to invest in, you know, do you really want to invest in oil or banks longer term? Probably not, or mining companies. We do think the trends in technology are much more sustainable longer term. And, you know, as long as we can provide our clients with access to that very exciting secular growth, but with some discipline around the valuation, we're going to be a lot less sensitive to interest rate expectations from here. And that's how we can provide that consistency of what, and that's really what we're trying to provide clients with this fund. This is a core technology fund that really is trying to provide long-term access to the exciting new technology themes and secular growth, but with a consistency of return, because we're not exposed to incredibly high duration, unprofitable tech companies that are going to see, you know, significant drawdowns anytime the winds of interest rates change.
Okay, Richard, thank you. That's a great way of finishing off, I think. I mean, we've covered a lot here in terms of definitions of technology company, look back over what's happened over the last couple of years, talked about sustainability and the impact that technology has and can make positively on our lives. And then, you know, as you talked about the global opportunity and how you're positioned. So when you talk about access, for the benefit of the listeners, the Janus Henderson Investors Horizon Global Technology Leaders Fund is available here in South Africa. Denker Capital, we act as the distributor here, and we're very pleased and proud of our partnership with Janus Henderson. So, Richard, thank you. Very much appreciate your time. And yeah, if anyone has any queries or questions, please don't hesitate to contact us here at Denker Capital, and you know, we'll get back to you. But Richard, thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Cheers for now.
Thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you found it interesting. If you would like to join us again, please subscribe for more investment insights. To find out more about our team and the funds we offer, please visit our website at denkercapital.com. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily represent those of Denker Capital. This podcast does not take the circumstances of a particular person or entity into account and is not advice in relation to an investment. Please do not rely on any information without appropriate advice from an independent financial advisor. The value of investments may go down as well as up, and past performance is not a guide to future performance. Denker Capital is an authorized financial services provider in South Africa.